Blog Talk Radio.
You unlock this door with the key of willingness. Beyond it is another dimension, a dimension of peace, a dimension of order, a dimension of agreement. You're moving into a land of both health and harmony, of transformation and solutions. You've just crossed over into the conflict-free zone.
Welcome to the Conflict-Free Zone. I am Paula Langus Ryan, the Compassionate Mediator, and for the next 30 minutes, we will travel together through the landmines in your life that are causing you to feel dis-ease, stress, conflict, making you feel unworthy, or stealing your peace in any area of your life today.
And so often there are so many things that we give our peace to, isn't there? It's funny that we say that are stealing your peace. That was just a little ploy for our egos, because nothing can actually steal our peace. We can give our peace away. We can gift wrap it. We can hand it over willingly. We can toss it at other people. But we're actually the ones that have the power to claim that back. They can't steal it from us. We had a really great show yesterday, and it prompted the show for today. So if you're interested in joining us online, you can enter the chat room. It's open. Guests are already coming up and sitting down, grabbing their coffee and hanging out in the chat room with me. Just refresh your show page screen there. Or if you'd like to call in and be part of the show, or just call in and listen, because you've got to be away from your computer. The guest call-in number is 949-203-4808. And we actually have a special guest that will be joining us this morning here on the Conflict-Free Zone. Yesterday, I'll tell you about who he is in just a minute. But yesterday, we had an interesting show. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about Dolly Sandusky, the wife of Jerry Sandusky, and whether or not she knew or didn't know about her husband's abuse of children, and whether or not that was forgivable or unforgivable. But we also talked about Gary Flakes, who is 32 years old, a motivational speaker who does outreach to at-risk youth, particularly sons of single moms. And he is a gentleman who served 12 years and 5 months in prison for his role in the murder of two young men, a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old, that were gunned down walking home in Colorado Springs. Gary Flakes himself was a young man at the time. He was 16 years old, and he's been out and has transformed his life and would love nothing more than to be able to have a reconciliation conversation, a restorative justice conversation with the parents of the two young men and the family members of those two young men that he had killed, and hopes to be able to do that. But we had some interesting conversations with folks that were calling in and talking about their thoughts and impacts about the fact of whether or not what Gary Flakes did was forgivable, and what to do when there's no forgiveness, when you have actually killed someone, when that person themselves cannot forgive you. And as a result of that, one of our loyal listeners shared what he does and why he does it. And so we have created a show around this today. We're going to be talking about the parents of murdered children and the parents of children that murder, and the struggle with forgiving, the process by which some find forgiveness for themselves and for others, and the process by which they don't. And our special guest today is Chris Edwin Dahl. He's the co-leader of the Minnesota Hope chapter of Parents of Murdered Children. His son, Jonathan, was shot and killed just 11 days after his 20th birthday. So we're looking forward to talking with Chris. For some reason, we haven't gotten his call yet in the studio to join us. So I don't want to imagine what he's going to say to us, but we will just kind of meander in my little brain here while we wait for Chris to call in. Again, the call-in number is 949-203-4808. So, Chris, if you're listening, I know you liked the link on Facebook, and we chatted a little back and forth there on Facebook about half an hour ago, so I'm hoping that you're in process of calling into the show. Hope you can hear the sound of my voice, as they say. So call into the show at 949-203-4808. I'm going to remind him of that in our little message here. A little dead air space because I can't type and talk at the same time, apparently. But anyway, so think about this. Think about what your reaction would be so that we can set this up a little bit. What would your reaction be if a child of yours was murdered at any age? We had a member of our congregation, of our band in Florida, whose son was brutally murdered, whose killer finally was executed on death row a few years back, and whether that brought closure or not. Well, I see we've got Chris with us. So again, Chris Stahl is the co-leader of the Minnesota Hope chapter of Parents of Murdered Children. His son, Jonathan, was killed just after his 20th birthday. And Chris, welcome to the Conflict Free Zone. Thank you for being with us here to talk about the whole forgiveness process and what's involved in this when something like this happens. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. And I just love the work you do. And as you know, I've been following your shows and implementing the information you give, and it makes a tremendous difference in all the people that I work with.
Thank you. I know, looking at the work that you do, I'm like, okay, I'm the one who needs to learn from you, because you work with folks that are in the midst of serious conflict and restorative justice issues with parents of murdered children. That's just awesome. And then the work that you do for victims.
Okay.
Well, tell me a little bit about what happened in your life when your son was murdered?
Well, there's, we have three different groups in Minnesota, and we have about 1,600 families in those groups that have come and gone over the years. The national organization has 500,000 members, National POMC Inc. If you look at our website, you'll see all the chapters in all the different cities. The process when someone murders a close loved one varies, but you go into a state of disbelief and shock. You have to eat all that grief. I put it as it's a 1 to 5 year process, and
wow,
then you reinvent yourself. You become a different person. The life you knew was over. Everything's changed now. So you, in order for you to have a life, you have to become someone else. You have to have
right,
a new life, because your old life is now over. And people struggle with that. There's some people that can't get through it. We have people in the group that the murders happened 30 years ago, and they know who did it.
Okay, I was going to say, is there any difference if you know who did it versus not knowing who did it, or if they were convicted or not convicted in the grief process?
In some ways, yes. It can vary, because if you don't know who did it and no one was charged, it makes it worse, because you hang on to the, I want revenge, I want justice, and it prevents you from reinventing yourself. It's like a roadblock in front of you.
Right.
So it's more difficult when no one's charged. It's more difficult if you know who did it and they got away with it. And
yeah,
they live in the same city you live in. And then you're afraid your relatives are going to revenge on the guy, and you're always worried about someone else dying over it.
Right. So even if you've come to closure around it or healed the parts that can be healed, you know, there's always that fear for someone else.
Yeah, the brothers and cousins and everyone else in the family wants revenge. So then your main concern is someone else dying over it. You don't want that to happen.
Yeah. So where are you at in the process?
For myself?
Mm-hmm.
That's a loaded question, Paula.
Yeah. It depends on the day, doesn't it?
Well, it made me a different person. So it took me 15 years before I was able to actually reinvent myself and let go of it. 15 years. What really drew me yesterday was talking about the word forgiveness.
Mm.
Okay? Because how do you forgive the unforgivable? That was the thing that really touched a nerve with me.
Right.
And there's with when it's an unforgivable act. Okay, so, and we'll say someone just murdered one of your kids on purpose.
Right. Right.
How do you forgive something like that? What I go through with people, and you have to realize when someone new comes in the group, the whole first year, they're in shock. And 5 years later, when they look back, they'll say, I don't even remember that first year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no healing or getting over it. You have two elephants cooked, laying on your dinner table, and you have to eat them. And those elephants are grief. So it's going to take you 1 to 5 years to eat them one bite at a time. And
yeah.
The problem comes when people refuse to have what life served up to them. It's vile, it's nasty, they don't want it, so they refuse to eat it. And then they carry it with them the rest of their life until they either eventually eat it or it eats them.
Right.
One or the other. So it's a
good
process.
Point. Yeah, good point, yeah.
Yeah, you have to eat the grief, and then you can reinvent yourself. But the first process is eating the grief, and nobody wants to.
Yeah, it's like,
so
I'm sorry, I don't like elephant. No matter how you cook it, I'm not going to eat it, yeah.
Yeah, elephant makes me sick. I'm allergic
yeah.
to elephant. Every time I eat it, I get vilely sick.
Exactly, yeah.
But
I throw up, and then you want me to go back to the table and eat some more? No, thank you. Yeah, I'm going to sit here and
right,
not.
Right.
I'm just going to ignore the elephant.
So I, rather than saying I'm a grief counselor, I refer to myself as a grief facilitator.
Excellent,
because
yeah, you just help facilitate people through the process.
Yes, but I put it like this. How do you forgive the unforgivable? Well, you can't. We're human beings. We can't do inhuman acts. So the closest you can come to it is to say, well, it's not my job to forgive them. That's a capital crime. I'm like a traffic cop. I can write off a misdemeanor, an offense. You smash up my car. You burn down my house. You do something that can be reversed. I can forgive you for that. But when it's irreversible and the wound was so deep, how do you forgive that? Well, you really, subconsciously, you can't. But what I learned is there is a place, once you've eaten your grief, you can say, I'm not God. Only God can forgive people. Who am I to judge someone? I'm not supposed to judge them. Well, how can I forgive them? I can say, that's beyond me. That goes to a higher court. I'm not the supreme justice. I don't have the right to forgive a capital crime. But I can let it go and say, that's in God's hands. That's between them and their maker. It's beyond me. I don't have the authority to forgive the unforgivable, but I can let it go and say that's not my job. I can let it go and say that's not my burden. I can let it go and say they'll get judged on judgment day. I'm not going to judge them, and I can't forgive them. So I can forgive myself for the hate and the anguish and the struggle with forgiveness. I can forgive myself for being human. I can forgive myself for feeling like I can't forgive them. I can forgive myself and say it's not my burden. That's between them and God. And on Judgment Day, we'll see what happens. But it's beyond me to forgive the unforgivable. But it is within me to let it go. To let it go to a higher power. Yeah, to let it go and say that's not my problem. I don't have the authority to go to that
higher court. Yeah, well, the biggest forgiveness work we can do is forgiving ourselves.
Yeah.
That's all we have control over. And like you said, you can let go of the anger toward them. And
mm-hmm.
you know, because we really don't. We don't know what drives people. So I don't know the story of Jonathan's death. Do you know who did it? And were they caught and convicted?
No, he was interfering with the drug business of some other teenage kids.
Okay.
And shit hit the fan, and violence happened, and the police were brought in, and a lot of drugs and money went down the road, and the people it was all fronted from, which was gang-related, demanded either payment or someone's life for it. So they were coached into setting him up and killing him because they couldn't give him back the money. So he was executed. And it was a 14 and 17-year-old that did it. And
ooh.
No one was ever charged with anything. So, yeah, it ruined the lives of the family. Their grandma lost their house. Those kids' lives were ruined. They've been in and out of prison ever since. But
so
they live
see,
in the same city.
Right, okay, they live in the same city. And when you see that, when you see that, okay, they're serving time for other things but not for his murder, when you see them out and about or you hear that they're out and about again, and how if you were given the chance to sit down and talk with them, what would you say to them?
I would say to them, I forgive you. But I don't want them to carry that in their heart anymore. To dive beyond that, and I let it go. And I know I just said it's unforgivable, but...
I know. I was going to call you on that, but we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about what just came up for you. You're listening to the Conflict Free Zone on Blog Talk Radio. This is Paula Lengith Ryan. My special guest today is Chris Edwin Dahl from the Parents of Murdered Children Organization, Minnesota Chapter, Minnesota Hope Chapter, and you can find more information on POMC at pomc.org.
You can reach Paula at www.compassionatemediators.com or call her at 800-507-9244 for mediation services and information.
Okay, Chris, so we're sitting here chatting away, talking about the unforgivable, and when I asked you what you would say to the 14 and 17-year-old who shot and killed your son, the very first words out of your mouth were, I would tell them I forgive them. Tell me about
yeah.
that. How did that just come out of your mouth?
Well, Jonathan's mom died from grief. Okay, she ended up killing herself over it because she always thought they knew where she lived and had a mobile home and kept moving. And then her brother, my brother-in-law, popped when she killed herself, and he went to seek revenge and kill those two boys.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the wrong house and killed two innocent people. Okay, so that was enough. I see this in the other families. I see the self-defeating behavior patterns that evolve in the family members. I see the revenge work that always blows up in people's faces.
Mm-hmm.
I know men that are hell-bent and fully intent on killing the murderer when he gets out of prison because the family they came from live in the same area, and they're not going to have them walking past their house.
Right.
That's where the
so
homicide prevention
time,
work comes in.
Right.
Each of these murders set it up for, if you get out in 7-14 years later, there's a good chance that that father, that child is either going to want to kill you or he's reached the point where he's going to let it go. Either way, it has to be funneled. It's
right.
just sitting there waiting all that time. But I met a woman here. Her name's Mary Johnson. And I don't know, I was at a vigil on Saturday for a five-year-old that was shot in a house that was shot up through the wall. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw those pictures. I saw the picture of the father in the middle of the grief circle, and there were no words for the power of that picture.
I was standing right there, and we all came in on him and gave him a big group hug. But we know what those families are going to go through now. And that house got shot up because someone shot up another house and driving by. And that's North Minneapolis. But I had to see the complete cycle of it before I could let it go. It had to completely devastate me where I said I had enough before I could let it go and say it's not my problem. So how can I make it so Jonathan didn't die in vain is to do intervention work, run a homicide response team here, do outreach to the freshly wounded families. So
and it's awesome to me that the strength of character it takes to do that. You know, we saw Adam Walsh do it when his son was taken. We saw Megan Harrington's parents, who I personally know, and Jill Harrington, she was abducted from a parking lot in a concert and was basically raped, killed, and chopped up and left in pieces in a field. And they found her remains finally, but her mom has created an organization called Never, I believe it's called Never Again, or not No One Else's Daughter or something like that, where
mm-hmm.
she educates people on what to do if you're suspecting that someone may be stalking your child, or you know, if your child is abducted, you know, presumably young single women. And it's just amazing that you can channel your grief into something, and that rage, just like Gary Flakes did, you know, after he was the driver in this car that where his friend Jerome Grant killed the two boys. You know, to be able to say, this is, I want to make the legacy be something meaningful. So how do you get people who might still be in the process? What are some tips to help them start to channel that a little better, like consciously start to make changes to help them move through the grief process?
It takes a group of people. It's
okay.
not something you can do alone. You have to find other people that are in the same boat with you and get in a boat with them and go on that journey. That's the only way I could paraphrase it. Because
okay.
there's nothing specific that works for anyone that's the same. You know, do you know what I'm saying? The journey
oh, yeah.
is different.
Yeah.
The
yeah,
guilt, shame, blame, and the coulda, shoulda, woulda, gonna, oughtas, and the wanting revenge. It's awful.
And to have a safe place where you can vent the desire for revenge, knowing that, you know, these folks aren't going to let you out of the room. So that part of the vent is over.
Yes, and as a human being, I went through this, and I've seen a lot of other people do it. You want to go kill the guy that killed your kid, and now later on that night you're going to sit there and feel like I'm no different than they are. You don't want to kill somebody else when you know what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to put their parents through that. So then you have all this internal conflict where you're getting pulled different directions because
right.
you keep
not to mention
seeing parts
would...
of yourself. I'm just like them.
Right.
Yeah. Even I've talked to people. We've had cases where was in Texas or Florida or a state with the death penalty, and everybody seems to want to kill the murderers at first. They hate them with a passion. There's all this hate. He's just steaming in it. There's the injury, and then there's the injury of why did they do this. It's like two injuries, the loss and then the actual physical damage occurred. There's two separate injuries.
Right.
And the first injury is the loss. It takes your breath away. You don't sleep for a week. You have cold sweats for 80 hours without stopping in the beginning.
Right.
And then once you get your breath back, you want to inflict that back on them. And then you don't like yourself for feeling that way.
Right, because if you call someone a monster and then you have that same desire, then it's like, oh, no, I'm the monster. And, yeah, it creates a huge dichotomy in ourselves.
You see a lot of sides of yourself that you don't like. When
so how do you heal those sides? How do you work through that for yourself?
It's a long-term process. You have to get – I firmly believe in the group process. You have to get involved with other people that understand what you're going through. John Q. Public will come up to you and they want to – like a parent want to take your pain away. But they get what we call foot-in-the-mouth syndrome. It's, oh, it's okay. You know, thank God you have other kids. God has
right,
a plan for
everything.
Right,
and you're like,
everything.
Seriously, now I'm going to kill you. Yeah.
Yeah, everything happens for a reason. Well, they're trying to take your pain away, but then they see the look on the face of the mother whose daughter was just tortured and raped for 2 weeks and then stabbed mm-hmm. and thrown into a pond. And you realize you just told her everything happens for a reason, and their response is, oh, I shouldn't have said that. They don't know how to take your pain away. So we get socially isolated.
Yes.
A circle of support. Our neighbors avoid us. People at work will turn and walk the other way rather than come up to you. If someone's shaking your hand and they realize who you are, they'll wipe their hand on their pants like you had germs. And
wow.
It's all subconscious. They don't realize that.
Yeah.
So it makes
yeah.
other people sick. And then we don't want to make other people sick, so we don't
yeah.
bring it up.
Yeah.
We don't talk about it to people that aren't in the circle. So then your support network gets really small, so you get isolated. In society, we have a program called Murders Not Entertainment. When someone murders someone in your family, all of a sudden you realize how much violence is on television and how murder is sold as a form of entertainment here. It's no longer, you can't sit down and watch TV, you flip through there. It's always someone pointing a gun at somebody or talking about who's dead or fascinated about who killed who. You know, it's absolutely entertaining that every single show on the channel is about someone who's dead and who
and
killed.
And even when it's not, the sitcoms are, you know, I'm going to kill you.
Right. Yeah, everything's focused around putting
mm-hmm.
the fear of death in other people. That's a root form of violence. Murder sells. People are fascinated with murder, but they're not fascinated with the effect it has on all the survivors.
Yeah.
If you look back over
really
the last...
It was really interesting. A few years ago, more than a few years ago, before I retired from speaking the last time, I met a woman in Tennessee whose son was on death row in Florida, and I knew people from my Florida center whose son had been killed. He was 5 or 6. And whose killer was on death row in Florida. And to see how the grief was similar for both parents was really interesting.
My saving grace for me was I met a woman here whose name is Mary Johnson, and she runs a program called Two Mothers, Two Fathers. Mm-hmm. It's in North Minneapolis. And she tries to, and what she does do is, she runs support groups for parents of murdered children, for family members, and she also runs support groups for the parents of children that murder.
Wow.
And the concept of that was beyond me. The whole idea that you could sit down and talk to those parents was mm-hmm. beyond me. But when Liz killed herself, which was years after Jonathan was murdered. And then I saw her brother go off and kill someone seeking revenge. He killed two people.
Right.
And they didn't have anything to do with it. Then I realized what it felt like, that I had to learn for myself that the murderers' families have it just as bad, or God forbid me to say, maybe worse. Because they have no support.
Yeah.
Everybody turns to them and, you spawned the devil. They killed my child. I hate you. I hate your family. They have people that want to hate on and kill them now.
Mm-hmm.
But their child's life is over and they don't get to bury him.
Yes.
They don't get to say goodbye. And it wasn't until I realized how many people were injured when this happens, and I saw the other side of it, that I really woke up and realized that it's just a mixed bag of bleep, bleep, bleep
the
line.
Yeah, all
this injures
down the line.
Everybody all the way around. And so my focus is on violence prevention and to prevent the retaliation murders.
Thank you. Thank you for all you
do murders
with that.
Here are, pardon me?
I said thank you for all you do with that. You're not going to believe it, of course, but we are out of time this morning. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. My guest this morning on the Conflict Free Zone has been Chris Edwin Dahl. He is the co-leader of the Minnesota Hope Chapter of Parents of Murdered Children. I hope that you will reach out to that organization if you find yourself in this situation. And, Chris, if you'll post on my Facebook page the link to Mary Johnson's organization, we will talk about that as well. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Have a conflict-free day. Be gentle with yourself. And above all else, forgive.
Your host for today's Conflict-Free Zone has been the compassionate mediator, Paula Langeth Ryan. For more information about transformational mediation, conflict resolution, and how compassionate mediators can help you have a more productive and peaceful life, visit CompassionateMediators.com. For more about Paula, to subscribe to Inner Transformation, her free monthly e-magazine, or to browse her Inner Transformation blog, visit PaulaLangethRyan.com. Be sure to check out the free gift section, where you'll find valuable no-cost tip sheets and reports to help you create inner and outer peace.